think. But I think you should all know that for the last, supposed to be since the beginning of the year, and it should have been done by now, but we're only halfway through it, I've been doing a series called Looking Towards the Future. And today is our third part. And what is this week? This is our seventh week in the year, I think, something like that. I want to share with you some quotes from individuals that didn't have much vision for the future. And I don't know if I'm butchering his name, but it probably doesn't matter since he was around in 1926, so none of you should know him. At least I don't think. Brian, you don't know him, do you? Okay. His name is Lee DeForest. And he said, "Theoretically, television may be feasible, but I considered an impossibility, a development which we should waste little time dreaming about." Thomas J. Watson, chairman of the board at IBM in 1943, said, "I think there is a world market for about 5 computers." Now, I will say this, if you're paying attention to the younger generation, computers are kind of phasing out. It's all devices now. So at some point, he may be right on that. And here's a funny one. A recording company expert in 1962 said, "We don't think the Beatles will do anything in their market. Guitar groups are on their way out." Now, I do nothing about the Beatles except for a few odds and ends, but I do know they were quite more famous than that. What is your vision for the future? If you remember from last year, and I know that was a long way back, I started out the new year with a series called 2020 Vision, and stating how 2020 was going to be a year with fresh vision and inspiration, and we're going to have a great future, and then 2020 happened. COVID-19 derailed our plans, and when you stop and think about it, did COVID really derail our plans? Maybe our plans. But don't think for a minute that God isn't using all that stuff for some reason, for some purpose, to equip us for the future. I really strongly believe that last year was a real training time for us to prepare us for the future. And I don't entirely know what or why, but God knows what he's doing. And that was planned or used by God, put it that way. Like I said last week, if you're a Christian, then the future as a Christian should be bright. God is going with us into the future. Even though things look really, and honestly, I think here recently things have kind of calmed down. If you're paying attention to the news, which I don't a lot, but it does seem to be a little bit calmer, like within the last week or two. But still, the future looks kind of scary. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what might lie ahead. And I've been sharing my burden over the last year, but especially over the last several months, how I feel like Christians are really losing focus on what is so important, and that is focusing on the kingdom of heaven and helping people to get there. And there's so much focus on politics and other stuff that I feel like that emphasis is being lost. And the Bible clearly tells us we're not to focus everything on earthly things. I mean, we need to some degree because we have to live here, but we're supposed to focus on our heavenly home. And if Christians would expend as much energy on winning souls as all the other stuff, like politics and corona and the different opinions and stuff, if we focused on winning souls, what would the population of heaven look like? Can you imagine? We need to be the change that we want to see in the world. Rather than fearing what is to come, we are to be faithful till Christ returns. Instead of fearing the dark, we're to be lights as we watch and wait. And I don't know who Harry Heintz is, but that's who said that quote. So we've been looking at 5 different biblical players and their prayers that they prayed during difficult, extremely difficult times. And these prayers are something that if we use in our own lives and use as an example, I think we would be so much better for them. And for myself, I just, it's been a real challenge to me. Like, wow, Lord, this is good stuff, and help me in my own spiritual walk. So I like to review for a little bit, and I hope that reviewing when I'm doing series that doesn't get boring to you. I know that I like to do that just to refresh your memory, and some of you told me you very easily forget, so maybe you don't even remember what I said 2 weeks ago. Maybe you don't even remember what I said last week or 5 minutes ago. I don't know, but even with TV series, if you're watching a TV series, and let's just say it's Blue Bloods, not that I watch Blue Bloods a whole lot or anything, but the start of the show, it'll say, last time on whatever show you're watching. So they know you need reminded. So this is last time on Looking Towards Your Future. David talked to God, and he prayed the prayer, search me. And that hit me so hard. Psalms 139 is a beautiful prayer of praise to God for all of his guidance, love, and protection. And David emphatically said, I will be an enemy of anyone who's an enemy of yours. And it appeared David had his relationship really good with God, and everything was right. But at the end of the prayer, David stops and says, search me. Just in case I'm missing something, search me. And know my heart. We don't know people's hearts. We can't see what's in their hearts. We need to worry about our own hearts. And that has been challenging to me, because I know how easily I can judge others based on something they're doing or saying. But am I checking my own heart? Am I asking God to search me? Then David says, try me and know my anxious thoughts. And our minds are the gateway to our actions. If we think about it, that will lead to an action. Usually you have to think about something before you do it. Now, this is not definitely played out in my home. I have an offspring that I'm not sure if that applies to. I think there's a ready, aim, shoot, or ready, shoot, aim, or however that's said. Ready, shoot, aim, that's how it says for one of my children. But we need to ask God to apply or to look at our thoughts and see where we're at with them. See if we're distracted to the point where it's pulling us away from our relationship with God, or causing us to be distracted with something that's not leading us towards him. And Satan is just thrilled if he can give us something to stew over and get us distracted from God, whatever it is. And there's been plenty of things this past year to cause enough anxiety to get us distracted from God. So ask God, take those thoughts captive. See if they're doing us any good. And if they're not, help us to just get away from that. Then David brazenly says, see if there's any wicked way in me. And David knew how easy it was for him to fall into sin. If he didn't stay close to God, he would fall into sin, because he had committed some pretty serious sins. If we're to be effective for Jesus Christ, we cannot have sin in our hearts. That is just a fact. Ask yourself the question, and it's a big question. Lord, is there any wicked thing in my heart? Then David's last words, and really had a big impact on me, is lead me in the way everlasting. We're so focused on the present and the next couple of years that we've lost sight of forever, eternity. Ask God to help us, lead us in a path that guides us into eternity, and help us to reach others so they can consider forever, not just the next couple of years. So David's prayer was a big impact. I hope it impacted you. I hope it helped you. Then we talked about Moses the next week, and his prayer was, show me. Moses was up on Mount Sinai. He was talking to God. He had received the Ten Commandments. God was explaining other laws and commands to him. And meanwhile, the people were down in the valley, and they were getting bored and not sure what Moses was doing. And lily-livered Aaron, he helped this situation along, and they constructed a golden calf, and they worshiped this calf, and God saw it and was very angry, and Moses pleaded with God, don't wipe them out. But just a little bit later, Moses goes down off the mountain and lost his temper and broke the Ten Commandments all at once. He was the first one to break all ten at one time. And then he ground up the calf and put it in the water, and it made the people drink it. I mean, very illogical stuff. Then because of their sin, the people that were on God's side destroyed the ones that were not on God's side. It was a very sad ending to a very sad story. How many lives today are lost because of disobedience and blatant disregard of God's laws? We see it all the time. And it's very easy to compare that story to our day and age. Society has blatantly ignored God, doing whatever they feel is right. If you feel it's okay, you just do it. How can we move forward? Well, Moses met with God and prayed the prayer. He started with, "Show me your way." He needed God to show them the way to go. He didn't want to leave that place that they were at unless he knew God was with them. It doesn't matter if someone or a group of people say this is right. If it opposes God and the principles of his word, it's wrong. And it's not the right way to go. If we want to make a difference in the world, we need to first ask God to show us the way and then obey what he says. Then Moses had this odd request, it might seem, said, "That I may know you." And if I think if anyone in the Old Testament history, if anyone knew God, it was Moses. I mean, he wrote a lot of the Old Testament, a large portion. And I love the fact that even someone as godly and as close to God as Moses, he still wanted to know God more. And it shows us that you're never too old, never too mature to still learn more about God. Have you ever asked, "Lord, help me know you better"? There's a lot of songs that go through my head when I think of that phrase. We should be daily seeking to grow closer to God. Then on the heels of that request, Moses asked another seemingly strange request, and that was that I might find grace in your sight. And again, if anyone was living in God's grace, it was Moses. If anyone had experienced God's grace, it was Moses. But here again, Moses was showing us that we daily need God's grace on our lives. I said to someone recently, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God, "How much grace did you have on me every day?" That would be a very humbling answer, I believe. We're human and fallen. Then Moses finishes his prayer with, "Consider that this nation is your people." Israel was God's chosen people, so why was Moses praying this? Why was Moses praying that God would consider them his people? He knew that if they were to move forward, that he needed to know that God still considered those people his own. And I wanted to ask you, and I asked you this several weeks ago, where do we place our allegiance? Are we God's people first? Or do we focus more about being good patriotic Americans or proud members of a certain party or whatever? We should never forget that we are God's people. That's our primary allegiance. So Moses' prayer was really powerful, and it's a powerful prayer to pray to seek God's presence moving into the future. Now I want to look at our third example. And this example might seem a little bit strange, and honestly, I was just a little bit nervous to share it because it just feels odd. But I feel like there's something here for us. So if you're in Judges, turn over to chapter 13. And let's see if maybe we can learn something from this guy called Samson. In Samson's prayer, we're going to call "Strengthen Me." And as I've done with the last several examples, we did a backstory and did history of what was leading up to these prayers, and we're going to do the same with Samson. Now, the little caveat, this story is really different. And I know you know the story of Samson isn't very pleasant. And I just feel like there's an importance to hearing this backstory leading up to this prayer to give us a full grasp of what was going on in Samson's life. So let's first look at his story, and I'm just going to have you point you to several verses as we go along and then skip over portions and just tell you what's going on rather than reading everything. But Judges 13:1 starts out with, "Again, the children of Israel did evil." And listen to that, "Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. So I think it's really easy to relate that day to this day, what's happening. You notice the word "again"? Really? Not again. You know that statement when, like, if someone in my household does something that I've said over and over and over again not to do? Really? Again? But yet again, people did what they wanted to do. And all through history, humanity has done whatever they wanted to do and seemed like they had issues obeying God. And here is no exception. So because of their sin, God allowed the Philistines to oppress them. Now, Would you say in today's society that it appears, and make sure you know I mean appear, it appears that Satan and sin has the upper hand, right? But only appears that they do, because God is in control. I'll never forget the conversation I had with Jack Horner several years ago. I said something about Satan is so powerful and he's doing a good job at what he's doing, and he kind of got pretty strong. He said, Satan didn't win. He said, God already won the battle. I was like, wow, that's really true. So even though it appears like sin and evil is winning, they don't have the upper hand. God's already won the victory. But because of their sin, God allowed the Philistines to oppress them. And think about our society. Do you think things that are going on in our world today might be God allowing things to get people's attention? Just maybe a little bit. So enter Samson's parents, Manoah and his wife, who isn't named and no one knows who her name was. The angel appeared to her and told her that she would have a son. And that was pretty incredible news because she was barren. Now that would be pretty special news for a woman to get. So listen to the instructions in verses 4 and 5 that the angel gave this woman. Now therefore, please be careful not to drink wine or similar drink and not to eat anything unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. And I want to point out several things here. First, there were special instructions given because Samson was a special child. He was a Nazarite. Nazarite it means set apart, devoted to. He was set apart to do something special for God. The second item to note was they weren't to cut his hair at all. And they didn't know why, because it wasn't told there. Samson later found out that it was God's gift to him, that he would grant him special strength at times when he needed it. From what I read in scriptures, he didn't have that strength all the time, just God gave it to him when he needed it. Because it says at different times the Spirit of God moved on him. So I feel like he didn't have that superhuman strength all his life. It's just at certain points. The third thing that was to be noted here is Samson only began to deliver God's people. He didn't do the job to completion. He just got the ball rolling. Granted, he made a lot of mistakes along the way. I don't know what God has in store for all of us. I don't know what he wants each one of us to do. I don't know where we're going to be 10 years from now. But I do know this. If we are Christians, then we are set apart by God to do special work for him. We don't need to get hung up so much on what each one of us might do or if someone does something bigger than the next person. We're to be faithful. We might be called on to do something crazy big and be like another Billy Sunday or Clara Barton or something like that. Or we might be just planting a seed. But whatever it is, we're to be faithful. Be faithful in what we're called to do. In the rest of the chapter, in chapter 13, Manoah asked God to send the angel again because he wanted to hear some instructions, and the angel did. And then, a really bizarre thing, he ascended up to heaven in the smoke and the fire from the sacrifice that they had offered. But look with me in the last two verses of chapter 13, which is verses 24 and 25. So the woman bore a son and called his name Samson, and the child grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move upon him. At least for the first portion of Samson's life, he was following after God's direction, and God was moving on him and blessing him and guiding him with the Spirit. The start of chapter 14 is where Samson starts to go off the rails. It goes to show that even someone with the most promising and bright and hopeful future as Samson doesn't mean they're going to turn out like you'd expect. If one chooses not to stay close to God, tragedy usually ensues. So let's look through this portion of Samson's life and see if we can compare it to where we are at as a society today. These stories should be really familiar to just about everyone here, but I'm going to review them anyway because I think there's some lessons to be learned. In chapter 14, verses 1 through 4, Samson found a Philistine woman that he wanted to marry. And obviously that's against God's design for him. He wasn't supposed to marry the enemy, but Samson didn't seem to care. She pleased him. And I think, wow, such a selfish human response. I want her. She pleases me. Go get her for me. So on the way to see her, a lion jumps out and Samson just rips him apart. And I feel like it was here that Samson realized God had given him a special gift. God granted him superhuman strength. In reality, commentators will say that he was to be a one-man army against the Philistines. So just remember that each one of us is gifted in some way. No, I don't think you're going to rip apart a lion or be incredibly strong. I don't mean that. But it is our choice whether we use that gift for God. And I can't say that Samson always used that gift for God. So they found the woman, and Samson was smitten. On the return trip back home, he found the beehive that was in the lion's carcass, and he helped himself. You wouldn't think much of that, but Samson's one instruction was he wasn't to touch a dead carcass, and he disobeyed God. In verses 12 to 19, we read the sad tale of his short marriage. They had a party, and they were celebrating the marriage, and at the party, Samson started bragging about his feat with the lion because it was his first experience with his new strength. So he posed a riddle, and he wanted them to answer the riddle, and they couldn't figure it out, so they threatened Samson's wife, and she sneakily tricked Samson into telling her the answer to the riddle, which she right away told her friends. This made Samson realize the traitor that he had married, and it ticked him off, so he killed 30 of her friends. That's a real good response to the situation. And then his new wife went to be with his best man. Now, doesn't that sound like a biblical version of a modern-day soap opera? It just goes to show that Satan hasn't changed. He has been working and is continuing to work and try to deceive and destroy anyone who follows the Lord. And one would think from this experience that Samson should have learned his lesson, but no, he didn't learn it. And I also want to comment here before we move on that even though things seem so out of whack here in the story, God still worked his will, and he still used Samson to accomplish what he wanted. Granted, Samson had to come to the end of himself, but we'll get to that in a minute. I guess I just want to make sure that everyone understands that whatever's going on in our lives, in your life, the story's not over. Okay? God's still working. At times it might not feel like it, and I get that. But don't doubt that God is still working. So this saga of Samson's short marriage continues in chapter 15. Samson wanted to be with his wife, to go be with his new wife after he killed all her friends, I guess. And his father didn't want him to go to be with his wife. And so he suggested Samson take her younger sister. And Samson didn't appreciate that. So he caught 300 foxes and tied their tails together and then put a torch between the tails and then set them loose in the Philistines' fields and just wiped out their crops. Now, that would have been pretty cool to watch, honestly. But the Philistines, they didn't care for that so much. So they literally returned fire with fire and burned Samson's wife and father-in-law alive. He retaliated because obviously you need to pay that back. And fought them without any weapons, with his bare hands, and it said he slaughtered a large number. Basically, he left heaps of Philistines. Now, look at all that happened so far, and this story isn't over yet. Samson disobeyed, and look what happened. So can we relate to today? There's so much going on. People are completely ignoring God's laws, and look what is happening. Chaos and destruction everywhere. Does a day go by you don't hear of some other place being destroyed or some other place being shot or some other person being shot? Do you think that just as it was with Samson, that there might be some people today that have to learn the hard way when it comes to disobeying God? I don't want to be in that group. I don't want to learn the hard way that disobeying God isn't the answer. I want to stay faithful to God with his help. Then midway through chapter 15, we find that the Philistines came up against Judah and camped camped their army nearby and caused the people of Israel much alarm among Judah. And when they found out the Philistines just wanted Samson, well, that's an easy fix. We'll just tie Samson up and take him to him, to them. So they did. And when the Philistines, and get this, they tied Samson up. So at that point, he obviously didn't resist. He didn't have the human superhuman strength to resist. But when the Philistines came shouting at him, Samson suddenly was graced with the superhuman strength. He broke the ropes like straw. He touched yet another dead carcass, took the jawbone out of the donkey, and killed 1,000 Philistine men with a jawbone. And most people, that wouldn't be a weapon weapon of mass destruction, but with Samson it was. And I don't know if you caught all this, but these last two chapters we quickly reviewed were recording the results of Samson seeking after a woman he wasn't to marry. Just that one thing, he wanted her. That's the act that started it all. And that's quite a list of disobedience. Quite a list of results of that disobedience. So 20 years go by, and chapter 16 finds Samson seeking another woman that God was not pleased with. In fact, she was a prostitute, and Samson went to be with her. We don't know her name, but the men of Gaza sure knew that he was there, and they found out quick, and so they wanted to be rid of him. Samson found out about that and decided, you know, just the best answer to this problem, I'll just grab the gates and the doors and the pillars and the posts and everything and just drag him away and just walk off. So he carried him up the nearby hill, and it's expected, and I don't know, it varies in numbers, but they're saying anywhere from 10,000 to 20,000 pounds is what he carried. That's pretty good. That's even more than a pickup load. Again, he experienced this special gift. Then he meets yet another woman. This one proved to be his ultimate downfall. And we all know the story of Delilah. Even the name sounds sinister. Verses 4 to 21 of chapter 16 tell this sad tale how the Philistines used Delilah to trick Samson to get him to tell them the secret of his strength. We all know the story how he told her, "Oh, you need to tie me with new ropes and I'll be as weak as any other guy." And she did, and that didn't work. Then he said, "Well, you need to weave my hair in a loom, and I'll be as weak as any other man." But he ripped the loom apart just by the hanging to his hair. And she started to pout and complain and whine, and he finally told her, "You cut off my hair, and I'll be weak." So while he slept, she did. And the Philistines easily captured him, gouged out his eyes, and made him work in the threshing mill like an animal. And you know the statement, sometimes a person needs to hit rock bottom before they really start seeking help. I think this was Samson's rock bottom. One would think that all the other situations should have gotten his attention, but apparently God has his attention now. And maybe one thing we can learn is this doesn't need to happen. Allow God to be in charge of your life. Look at all the heartache Samson had to go through. He could have avoided all that if he would have followed God. So, while Samson was in captivity, the Philistines decided to have a large party and celebrate the fact that their enemy was in their hands. They were in the temple making sacrifices to Dagon, and they were so thankful and praising their God, and they decided, "We're going to bring Samson out and use him like a sideshow freak." And it is at this point where Samson's prayer comes into play. And don't worry, I'm almost finished, just a short portion yet, but I realize that this message has been really different, but I feel like we can learn a lot from Samson's prayer if we can listen and understand his backstory. Of course, Samson was blind, and he was led into the great temple, and they placed him up on like the stage between the two main pillars holding up the building, and Samson asked the boy, and I always struggle with that part of the story because the boy was part of the slaughter. But he asked the boy to lead him to the pillar so he could pull the building down. And the boy did. But here we have Samson's prayer in chapter 16, verse 28. Samson called to the Lord, saying, "O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes." Now, I may be using my imagination here a bit, but I can see Samson thinking about his life, and you know the life flash before your eyes thing, thinking about the mistakes he made, thinking that he really has no right to ask God for anything because he screwed it up so royally. He didn't deserve God's blessing, but he prayed for it. He asked God, grant me one more time. Let me use my gift that you gave me one more time, just this once. And you're probably wondering, what in the world does that have to do with us today? And as I said, it was a little bit of a struggle to try to put this together, but I feel like there's a lesson here. When we feel like everything is lost, and we think there's no way out, God gives strength. Samson was at his absolute lowest, and he realized he had one last chance to make an impact and try to deliver God's people, even if it meant dying himself. And I realize this is a morbid example, but if we think about Samson's life and all the blunders he made, yet God was still willing to hear him at that last time and strengthen him, we can take encouragement from it. And honestly, I don't know where you're at here. I know all of you pretty well. But there might be some inner struggles you're dealing with and no one has a clue about. Maybe you need to hear this. I don't know. I just, hopefully through all my bumblings, you can get a message here. Maybe you feel like you failed God. Maybe too many times have failed God. Maybe you're struggling with a lack of faith in God's power that he has control over this chaos we're living in. Why would God single you out or me out and give us a strength when so many other people need it so much more than we do? I really don't know. And honestly, I'm not really sure how to tie this together except to say that if anyone should not have been given special strength, it was Samson. Because, like I said, he screwed up royally. Yet, God in his mercy gave Samson one more chance to use his gift. And if you're like me, I've prayed multiple times for the Lord to give me strength. There's been so many times in the last several years that I didn't have the energy or the strength to press on. And I just told him, I need you. And no, he doesn't give me superhuman strength to carry some tombstones away out here or something. But just like Samson, when I'm on the other side, I realize, oh yeah, God really did help me through that. And I think I shared this with you before, and I'm in no ways at all trying to exaggerate. This is absolutely the truth, and I'm not trying to make myself look good by any means. But I can remember distinctly in 2016 when I was really struggling physically and with my nerves, I literally would hold on to the pulpit because I couldn't stand up on my own strength. And I'm not exaggerating. I felt so weak I couldn't really stand there. And I would hold on to the pulpit while I preached. And probably nobody noticed that. But I realized how much God had given me strength to get through. And I look back on times like that, and I realize how God in his great compassion and mercy showed me that it wasn't me, it was him giving me strength. And I know we've all been through a bizarre, tough year, and you know when something bizarre happens, like during 2020, when something bizarre happened, you'll say, no, it's par for the course, it's 2020. You know, have a flat tire and then change that and then the spare goes flat, you know, something like that. That's 2020. And as I was typing this, and I was typing in my journal, this was two Tuesdays ago, a week and a half ago or so, I was typing in my 2021 journal, and I looked at the file name, and it said 2020. It was supposed to say 2021, and it was at that moment that I realized I had wiped out 2020 and saved 2021 over top of 2020. So I lost all of 2020's journal. All the stuff that I typed in over 2020, maybe the lessons we learned. And at that point, I thought, you know, fitting ending to 2020, it's gone. And I just heard the other day, you know how we say hindsight is 2020? We can literally say that now. 2020 is hindsight. Okay, just throw that out there. But we've been through a tough year, and I know many of you are struggling, currently feeling like, hey, I don't have the strength to move forward. But I've heard this statement, I've been using it. We need to be the change we want to see around us. We need to be willing for God to start the work in us before we can expect to point out flaws in someone else. And the tricky part is, so much is whacked out of shape right now that we don't really know how to proceed because it's so confusing. Well, that is when this prayer comes into play. We need to pray that God gives us the strength to know to do what we need to do. We've already prayed for him to search our hearts like David did and then guide us with his presence like Moses did. Now we need to pray that he gives us the strength to do just that. Yeah, likely if you're like me, you've fallen into the trap of judging others for their behavior while forgetting that we need to focus on our own issues. I know that. I've done it. But because of our failings and questions, it's likely we're wondering, how is God going to give us the strength? Beyond that, why would he? We certainly failed enough. Why? We don't deserve that. But I'm here to say that the same God that granted Samson special strength and granted his request when he needed it the most, even when he didn't deserve it, and we're not comparing, we're not supposed to compare sins, but I would say that he did a few worse things than we did. So if God can do it for him, he can do it for us. He is able to strengthen us. And as I said, I struggled to use Samson as illustration because it felt odd, but I just felt like there's something here for us. So I know God can use my bumblings, and actually it keeps me humble. If I flub things up, then it just, you know, helps me to realize that God's doing it, not me. But the bottom line is we all need God's strength. No, maybe not to pick up the church doors and carry them into Mercersburg. Probably isn't the best result. And no, I wouldn't recommend you do like Samson and go to your closest political rally and pull the pillars down and get rid of all those people. That's just not probably the best idea. But the bottom line is we need God's strength. The future is uncertain. Do we have the strength to make it? No, we don't. But God does. God does give us the strength to make it. I want to read the words to this one song I thought of as I was preparing this. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. But sometimes I wonder what he can do through me. No great success to show, no glory of my own. Yet in my weakness, he is there to let me know. His strength is perfect when our strength is gone. He'll carry us when we can't carry on. Raised in his power, the weak become strong. His strength is perfect. His strength is perfect. We can only know the power that he holds when we truly see how deep our weakness goes. His strength in us begins when ours comes to an end. Isn't that powerful? He hears our humble cry and proves again, his strength is perfect when our strength is gone. He'll carry us when we can't carry on. Raised in his power, the weak become strong. His strength is perfect. His strength is perfect. So I challenge you today, obey God. Don't follow Samson's example, but follow the Samson's example and pray for God's strength. Because his strength is absolutely perfect, and he can give us the strength to make it. Let's bow for a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for the promises in your word. And thank you that we can learn from a story like Samson, who just royally messed things up.